It is Saturday, the 5th of February, and this is episode 76 of Digital Outbox. Welcome along to a very grey and miserable Saturday morning. I'm in a strange old mood today, and helping me to level out my mood is Ian.
Good morning.
And also Henry.
Good morning, good morning. And
is this
how
the first time
today?
We've done a morning one? And is,
I think
is that why
it,
I'm feeling like
is.
This?
I don't know.
I'm just kind of pleased. It's still grey here, but it is permanently grey here, but it's not as windy.
Crikey, it's really blustery down here. And
oh, well, you've obviously got the wind that we had last night.
Yeah, or Thursday night when I flew up from Bristol.
Yes, that must have been a fun journey.
Bumpy, bumpy.
Like a 4x4 flight.
Well, the good thing about it is, you know, when you're about 20 feet from the ground, he is just going to slam it in there to make sure it doesn't bounce around.
We're close enough. Let's go.
just go for it. Bang.
Yeah, so I'm in a right old strop this morning. I didn't
you
sleep
are.
Very well last night. I know you can all tell.
Evil mood.
Yeah.
Evil.
However, it was me that put pressure on everyone to get on early because I've got to nip out. So let's crack on. And I am late. Yes. Let's crack on. First story of the week was the discovery that Microsoft's Bing search engine actually copies what Google says, or at least takes into account what Google says in their search results.
Yes.
Is that the summary of the news?
Next story. No, so if you haven't read about this, Google run a I think this is bogus. Google run a sting operation that proves Bing has been watching what people search for. So basically they set up some bizarre search terms to return back one result. You know, so typing in like gobbledygook into your keyboard and it returns one result. And lo and behold, a couple of weeks later, the same gobbledygook in Bing returned the same result. And it was totally unrelated. And they've got lots of different examples for this. And the reason they started doing this was that they couldn't believe how similar Bing's and all like top searches, etc., were to Google's. It just seemed too much of a coincidence. so Google's
Boffins.
Amit Singhal. I'll have a crack at the pronunciation again, but I think Boffin probably was the best. His quote, "I've spent my career in pursuit of a good search engine," who's, and Amit Singhal is a Google fellow who oversees the search engine rankings algorithm. "I've got no problem with a competitor developing an innovative algorithm, but copying is not innovation." So I stuck down, is it copying or being clever?
Yeah, because surely this is a mashup. That's
yeah,
all
exactly.
This comes back down to. It's just someone using the information. You know, Google's all for open. So, you know, someone using a resource that's on the internet, a good resource, given, you know, they've had years of years of practice at this, and they're just using that as one of their signaling factors.
Yeah, what? Pretty much. And the one thing they seem to be hooking into is, and Google are having a right old moan about this. Is that,
well, it's their core business, don't forget
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but,
I mean,
but
you
hold
understand.
On. But hold on, Google having a right old moan, and it's when you install the Bing bar or you put IE8 on, you get an option to say, do you want to turn on suggested sites? And the way Matt Cutts describes it is, that sounds a really good idea, but what Microsoft don't tell you is that they're tracking every click. So all it is the Google guys installed it on XP or Windows 7, put on IE8, enabled this, set up their search things, and they knew this was all getting encrypted and sent back to Microsoft. So it's no big surprise. The only thing that is a bit odd is Microsoft are saying they use over 1,000 different signals to return the results, but it just seems to be this one signal.
Yeah, but don't forget, all signals are weighted.
Yeah, it's definitely a weighted signal, definitely.
Yes.
And you know what? I think there's... I can see why Google are upset. At the end of the day, you know, they spend... you know, millions, billions on getting their algorithms right and the research and stuff that goes into it. Now, in some respects, if you consider that to be a product, it's almost like Bing are taking that to a certain degree and just whacking their name on it.
But what I didn't like was Matt Cutts, and I've put the video link in the show notes, he had a panel discussion with one of the Bing engineers, and he was saying that, you know, when Google... Because the Microsoft guy was saying, if you look at the EULA, it tells you what we're doing. And he was like, oh, no, it doesn't. It's all hidden away. And we put a big red button. And I installed Google Shopper last night. And then the options. So you have to go into options, which you might never go into. Send user statistics is defaulted to on. They don't tell you you've got it on. Why have they turned it on by default? And this is a bit I don't like. So it's all right calling out people. But if you're calling out people, you need to be squeaky clean. And they're not. I mean, they track everything. That's why Gmail's free. You know, they track everything. So to turn around and start complaining that Microsoft are tracking search results is a bit weak. But I think they're trying to get away from the press over the last sort of 2-3 months about the poor results you get in Google now.
I thought they were trying to get away from the do no evil thing.
Oh, I don't know. And I wonder if this is the change in the guard? Them going to be a bit more punchy?
Well, they've had a changing of guard at the top of their structure, haven't they? They've been restructuring and bouncing people around. So,
anyway, well done, Bing. It's good to know that your 500 million loss every quarter is because you're copying people.
So, also, Microsoft, in another move, which kind of scuppers Google again, they have released a plugin, an H.264 video plugin. So Google came out and said they weren't going to support H.264. So Microsoft have now released a plugin for Chrome, as is their right, to play H.264 video inside the Chrome browser. Is that
just for Windows, or will that work cross-platform?
No, just Windows.
Yes, because they're talking about it enabled for their Windows 7 customers.
Lovely.
But, you know, another move that's kind of... it's aggressive, isn't it, really? Kind of saying, you know, you can say what you like, Google. We're doing something else.
I think that's the way it's going to go over the next few years.
Yeah. It's very confusing, though, for end users, isn't it? I mean, you know...
Well, in some ways it's confusing. I think it's expensive for businesses. What do you go and support?
None of this is supposed to, you know, the whole end game should be that it's invisible to the user. That's the whole point. So the fact that the user has to be aware of all this... is obviously something that needs to be addressed. Effectively, it should be invisible, and I think that's what obviously Google are hoping with WebM, is the fact that it's an open platform and therefore it can be completely invisible. You don't have to worry about licensing or anything.
As long as everybody signs up to it, though, isn't it? That's the thing.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what they've struggled to get in the past.
I think
you'll see it more.
We'll only see how successful that move around about WebM is maybe a year from now.
I think, yeah. It's, obviously, when YouTube goes over, that's a big move. Whether anyone else follows, I'm sure they will. I think it will become bigger because people can integrate video, you know, without worrying about licensing. I think we'll see it. I don't know if it's going to be a year or even maybe longer. I guess a year is a long time in tech. Right, so we're still having problems over in Egypt. I say we.
I've not got any, really.
I mean, I thought my morning was bad, but I'm sure their mornings are worse at the moment. Anyway, so there's been lots of initiatives to try and help people get messages out from Egypt, because Egypt, pretty much their net traffic went down to zero as they shut it all down.
And it is back up now. I think a lot of it has come back up.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's just an initial reaction, but any government which has that initial reaction is a little bit dodgy in the international arena, I think. But anyway, so we've got a new service called Speak to Tweet that's come out.
Yep, Google's teamed up with Twitter. Google bought a company called CNow just 2 weeks ago. And what it basically is you can phone, there's three different numbers you can phone from anywhere in the world. But specifically these numbers that they're using for Egypt. And you leave a voicemail and they'll turn it into a tweet. And automatically append a hashtag of Egypt onto it.
So, and this is a voicemail that literally inside the tweet you click on a link and it effectively just plays the MP3 audio, whatever it is that they save as.
So it's a bit like Audio Boo.
Yes, very similar.
But obviously it's free to use, and with the aim of helping people get messages out when they can't get on the internet.
Yep. So well played, Google.
Yeah, well played. I don't know who sits there and listens to all these messages, and most of the messages are surely going to be testing. Hello.
No, well, I think And I think there's been a lot of discussion this week about how important social media was to the kind of uprising and the part it's played. You know, initially authorities tried to block Facebook and Twitter, and that wasn't enough because you just can't stop, you know, one or two sites. And I think it has been very important in allowing people to assemble and get organised.
Aye. Indeed. Right. Another Google story we have. They have released their art project, I think, is basically like Street View, but you can go around art galleries. Yes. I had a quick look. Looked quite impressive. I chose the Tate Britain, or whatever it's called. And I had a quick peek around. It was a bit frustrating and maybe not actually the best way of navigating around a gallery, but it's the kind of most realistic online sort of experience like that we've had in a long while.
Yes, and it was the fact that the actual pictures themselves wasn't just, you know, obviously using the kind of Street View technology to move around the gallery, but the pictures were in really high res. You know, you could zoom right in and see brush marks and all sorts of nonsense.
So have they licensed those images then? Because it's actually a big source of revenue for museums and art galleries these days, that they make digital reproductions of their artworks and then selling them, licensing them around those images around the world kind of makes some money.
I don't know what the license deal are. I think there was it something like 15 or 20 museums have signed up to this. So it's not like there's hundreds initially, but there didn't seem to be any mention of deals on the site.
When you're going around these kind of places, they never let you take photos, do they? For that probably very reason.
No, well, they want you to go to the shop, don't they, and buy the
postcard. Yeah.
I mean, I've got to be honest, museums in Glasgow aren't too bad. They'll let you take photos as long as you don't use flash.
I think...
They're a bit like Apple then, are they?
Very good.
I think it depends on how pernickety the gallery is, and obviously only the galleries that want to do this are signing up for it. But then again, you know, it is important to a gallery how a picture is viewed and how they kind of display it and its relationship to other things. That all sounds very arty, doesn't it? But they obviously position things in galleries for a specific reason.
Yes, and mostly to make money out of postcards.
So now you can go and have a look at that all online. Yeah, it's quite a snazzy little bit kit. That's Google Art Projects. GoogleArtProject.com. If you want to have a look at that. We've had the Android Honeycomb event. Now I didn't look at any of this, so someone's going to have to fill me in.
Oh, did you look at it, Henry?
No.
Oh,
looks good, like it's you, Ian.
Goodness gracious! I guess the interesting thing about this was that after News International had announced the kind of daily launch was going to be February 2nd at, I don't know, 6 o'clock at night or 5 o'clock at night. I can't remember what time it was. Google, I think a day later, then says, "By the way, we're going to have a Honeycomb event, and we'll have it a couple of hours earlier."
That's a very Apple move, isn't it?
Yeah, and there was also lots of talk that they were going to launch their music service, which has been kind of rumoured and talked about for a year, 18 months now, and it's still not out. Basically, they just kept it to a pretty much a tech demo of what we can expect in Honeycomb, but just very impressive. They showed you a lot of the kind of APIs that you can now call on, very similar to how Apple have moved the development on iOS, and a lot of power there that the developers can tap through APIs. And just I think the thing for me that was really interesting was that the front end, I think we've seen lots of screenshots and other videos, but the front end I think looks really, really nice. You know, for a tablet, I think they've really taken advantage of that real estate.
Yeah, so I think we talked about this last week. It's almost geek heaven because you're free to customize and do what you want, which actually, say, it goes against the Apple philosophy, which is probably why... Did I say that right? I think I said that wrong. But it's sort of...
Nobody noticed.
Yeah. it goes against what Apple want to achieve, which is why they haven't done it yet. Maybe we'll see with a new tab that they'll go down a bit more customization route, but I'm not so sure.
No, yes. I can't see it. I can't see Apple doing that, changing that. But I think, you know, Apple have had everything. It's all been one-way traffic for so long. It's actually really good to see some sort of competition.
Well, it's different niches, aren't they? People sort of breaking down the sector into how can we differentiate our product from, from what Apple are doing.
Yeah. So they also showed a demo game ported from the PS3, and the graphics were similar to a PS2's graphics. So to have that on a tablet that you can take around and it's got a long battery life is very impressive.
Running graphics like that, it'll have a battery life of an hour.
Well, you don't know. You don't know. I mean, I still think. Well, it's back to the
basic kind of physics,
yeah,
isn't it?
I think I'm with you, Chris. I think we do know.
It's not going to be an hour. Come on, you're not going to play a game and it's going to last an hour. If it is, nobody's going to buy the tablet.
Oh, people!
You're saying things that all could be true.
The only reason I'm saying that is if you look at is it Infinity Sword or whatever on the iPad?
Yeah.
You can sit and play that for 2-3 hours, and you're not going to run out of battery.
Okay.
You know, and that's why I'm saying that there's a benchmark there that they've got to go up against. You know, and if people turn around and say, oh, you're only going to get an hour out of it, then I wouldn't touch a tablet.
I am very cynical on battery life in general, though.
The iPad's one of the few that I've seen that I've been really impressed with.
Well, but that's because it's an iPhone-sized device with the rest of the space that they're available for battery. And
that's why it's so goddamn heavy.
Yeah, but that's
part of the problem. It is, absolutely, and that's part of the problem, though, with a 7-inch tablet, that actually you don't have the same space for a battery. So you don't.
Yes, without going for depth, you don't get that same kind of storage capability.
Yeah, the one thing they did announce was the Android Market Web Store. So this was moving to a web browser based store, and they had a couple of zing moments in the very graphically rich, similar to like the App Store and iTunes. But when you click to buy, it shows you which device you want to install to, and then you click complete your purchase. As soon as the credit card transaction completes, you get a notification on your phone, the app's downloading. No wires, no syncing with computers, none of that sort of nonsense was the actual word said. And it is true. It is, you know, when you're using Kindle and you buy something in the Kindle store and you say, which device to send it to? That one. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
And also, in-app purchasing is coming. So something that maybe some developers are missing out on right now is the in-app purchasing. So that's definitely coming to Android.
Well, nobody buys Android apps, though. So
it doesn't. No. was there not one of these crazy infographics that says that if you compare the mobile platforms, was it 98%, 97% of apps purchased are on iOS devices?
Absolutely.
You know, so even though people are saying market share's gone to Android, if you're a developer, that's a fairly telling statistic.
Yeah, because and it's because the general, like I say, geeky people on a phone like an Android can go get around all the kind of having to pay and stuff like that, or you know, just do things in different ways. They know they got free options, whereas Apple are very, very, very good at pointing you towards.
I don't think that's
the paid for version. No,
I disagree. I look at some colleagues and I look at their apps on their phone. There's just. I think there's still quite a difference here between what's available in both platforms.
And say as developers, until they get on board, it's almost like we need the tipping point to happen. But it doesn't seem to have happened anywhere, you know, close.
Well,
it's not based on the numbers, is it? Clearly, it's based on who you've got using your phone.
But what does it matter? You get Angry Birds for free on the Android.
That's true, and they're making millions off the adverts. So as a developer, there are other ways apart from, you know, actual buy my app.
Anyway, for all the money that Apple are getting, they clearly want more.
More?
Yeah, always want more. So they have, I mean, this is definitely a case of when is a change, not a change. When Apple says. They have changed, although they say they haven't, their kind of... authorization of app process to say that if you basically have to let people buy in-app purchases, you can't have an external store which sells, say, ebooks.
Oh no, you can. You can have an external store, but you
only
also
if people can buy in-app as well.
Yes.
Do you want to sort of take us through it? Because this was quite a beefy story, really.
Well, I mean, I think you summed it up pretty well. It broke the day before the Daily announcement came. And it was Sony basically looked at it because their reader app has been blocked by Apple. And Apple gave them the statement that, you know, all in-app purchases would have to go through Apple. And that was what Sony started, you know, looking out to the press. And for me, what was quite, and I shouldn't say funny, but, you know, I was reading this and thinking, this is a disgrace. And it's stuff like that that really hacks me off. You know, that you have one view and that you're happy until you build up a market share, then you change it. But a lot of the I'll say Apple loyalists, I won't say fanboys until later on, but a lot of the Apple loyalists were like, don't be daft, this can't be the case. You know, and this wouldn't happen. And, oh, what about Kindle? There's no way they would do that to Amazon. It's too big a thing. But then later on in the day, Apple put out an official statement. We have not changed the developer terms or guidelines. We are now requiring that if an app offers customers the ability to purchase books, and they specifically said books, outside of the app, that the same option is also available to customers from within the app with in-app purchase.
Yeah, so we have not changed our developer terms and guidelines. We are now requiring.
Yes.
That's like that you are on an unlimited internet connection, but with a limit.
So the statement that they seem to that people have picked out is saying apps utilizing a system other than the in-app purchase to purchase content, functionality, or service in an app will be rejected. And that's the closest that somebody can find to an actual statement in the developer guidelines. So, and you're reading this and you're thinking, they've mentioned books, but what if you're Spotify right now? What if you're, and I've put in, it's a very specific one, Remember the Milk, because it's a free app, but you need to pay like for a yearly service to use the app. What if you're comics? What if you're Netflix, Wired, all these publishers that have got content out there, and at the moment, you're handing off to them and you're buying that, you're buying the content. Apple want that 30%.
It's another, yes. And so it, from my point of view, it doesn't really matter whether it explicitly said that this is exactly the case in their guidelines. The fact is that they've been overlooking that for a good long time now. And now, say, so they're now moving the goalposts again. And like you say, there's some, effectively, they're saying we want 30% of anything you do on our device.
Yeah.
Oh, that's always been the case with Apple. I don't think that's been, and that's, I don't think they've been quite, I think anybody who's thought that, you know, that was going to be different is, you know, living in cloud cuckoo land. That's always been the thing about
using. You say that, but if an app's been approved or, you know, a process has been approved and it's gone through all their processes, then for them just one day to say, you can't do that anymore. So it seems a little bit, you know, maybe you could say going forward, everything from now on.
No, I think that's always been the case. Now, there have been apps that have got through the process and then they've changed their mind later on. And, you know, I think this is just a similar thing. They're just saying, you maybe got away with it for a while, but you're not getting away with it anymore.
You got away with making some money for a while. Now we want our bit. Anyway, I thought it was a pretty ugly move. But then again, I'm not Apple, and I'm not the one that with the massive bank account.
No, and I tend to agree, especially with this year you've got options. You know, last year with the iPad, you didn't have options to go and buy tablets. Yes, you can go and buy an Android tablet, but it's not a very good experience. But this year, it will be.
Yeah, I think we'll see massive. Well, I mean, we've already seen a massive movement going on with, say, for me, an Android phone is now probably the phone of choice, but still I'm hanging on to see what the iPhone does.
And it's interesting, I mean, it's Super Bowl weekend, you get all the big adverts. I mean, Motorola, I think their 15-second teaser came out this morning, and they're all looking at it as a, you know, they're portraying Apple as IBM, so they're trying to kind of, you know, play on the Apple advert from, was it 1984? I think it was, when they were kind of like IBM, and Apple were the mold breakers. I think Motorola tried to do the same thing and say, you've got all these, you know, iOS people, you know, walking around just buying this stuff. We have an alternative now. And I think that's true. I really do think there are options here.
Well, our friend Paul is picking up his Nexus S today, apparently, and he has kindly said that he will give us a review.
Fantastic.
Of his experience with the latest and best Google phone out there,
and I mean, I just want it for the maps. I don't care about anything else. I just want the maps.
So I'm intrigued to know how he gets on. He has had an iPod Touch up till now, so he's at least got experience of iOS device.
One little interesting bit on this is that I expected more to come out of this when the Daily was launched. And it didn't, but I'll let you carry on.
Well, yes, because we're going to go talk about the Daily. Now, the Daily is... what's his name? What's his chops?
Rupert.
Rupert the Rupert. Bear.
Our mate
a
Rupert
proper Rupert.
is releasing...
I mean, you couldn't think of a better name, would you, to kind of slag the guy off?
Oh, yeah, I can think of plenty of names.
Let's call him Rupert.
Hold on. I can think of plenty of names.
None of which would be broadcastable with a clean tag.
Oh, I don't know.
You'd find a way.
It's always a way.
So our friend Rupert has actually released his project called The Daily, which is effectively the first, or he would say the first only digital newspaper, I guess, or news. I'm struggling with words. How would you describe it? Is it a newspaper?
Yes.
It's okay. A digital newspaper for the iPad.
Yes.
Okay, for iOS devices. Is it iPad or iOS devices?
iPad.
So it's only the iPad. But he has he's talking like we've been talking for ages, which is once you get rid of all your distribution network and printing factories and all that kind of nice stuff, you can suddenly deliver for 99 cents per week.
Yes.
So that's all they're charging.
So at the moment it's free. So the first 2 weeks are sponsored by Verizon. But I think that's because Apple's not released the software yet to do the subscriptions. So,
so 1 week of your free week is going to be not having anything?
Oh, no. You just fire up the app and it updates.
Right, okay.
And we also need to be careful because it is 99 cents a week or it's $40 a year. So it is pretty cheap for the content you get. You do get quite a lot of content. And Apple are saying that we're starting with the Daily as a subscription service, but you'll hear other announcements soon from other publications. But, Murdoch, he was quite open on stage. He spent $30 million on this already. It took $30 million to set up because I think he said there was 100 journalists working on this. And I think it was half a million dollars a week it's costing. So it's $55 million a year he's investing in this.
Do we know that? I don't believe him.
Well, that's what he published to shareholders last week.
Does it really cost that much to keep?
Well, that's on
maybe that is what it costs. Maybe.
On the notes to shareholders, that's what they've said is the cost just for the Daily.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's a lot of money.
That is a
that's
lot
an
of
awful
money.
Lot of subscriptions you need.
That's
to
a lot of
cover
subscriptions at 99 cents a week.
Well, it's a lot of subscriptions and a lot of advertising, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. So, it's US only, so not available in UK store.
Yeah, why are we even talking about this?
Two reasons. One, on their official Twitter account, they said that they're hoping to get to the UK soon. And secondly, I've downloaded it.
So I'm wondering whether, when they say come to the UK soon, whether we're going to have American journalists talking UK news or whether we're actually going to have our own...
don't start. It's not going to work, is it? I'm not paying 99 cents a week for that.
No, and that's not going to work.
Will it be 99p by the time it gets over here?
Yes, that wouldn't work.
Well, 59p at the Apple exchange, wouldn't it, for apps and things?
Sure,
59p a week. Would you go for 59p a week?
I'd be tempted, actually.
Yeah, I would.
But there are some caveats. The app itself isn't the best, so it feels a bit kind of slow.
So they spent 30 million and it's crap.
It's not crap. It's not crap. Don't get me wrong. There's some of the content's nice and clear. Easily read, easy to navigate. They've got a kind of 3D cover flow carousel type thing to step through articles. But it feels a bit kind of jerky, slow when you're moving through it. They have tried to include, it doesn't just update once a day. So at the moment it's a kind of manual, fire it up, it checks to see if there's a new one and then it gets that new one. And I'm assuming the subscription service would start to deliver the content, but they weren't very clear about that. And the Apple exec that was there was Eddie Q. He was basically saying, we've got more news in the next couple of weeks. So it's all looking like, I mean, they're saying that the next 2 weeks are free, so I guess we're all going to get an iOS update in the next 2 weeks.
So they're kind of working slightly ahead of the curve, basically, is what you're getting the impression of.
Stories are all very US-centric. They did do some world coverage, but again, it's from Rupert Murdoch. So I'm not convinced it's very unbiased. The entertainment stuff was quite well done. There was lots of photos and videos. Lots of the kind of 360, drag around photos. So they seem to be emphasising that. That seems to have become the kind of It's like back in Encarta, you know, when we got Encarta from Microsoft, and everybody's like, oh, this is the future. A lot of the apps are all turning into that.
Yeah, I wonder, is this the first proper attempt at a newspaper? I mean, Guardian app and things over here.
But the Guardian app's taking web content, isn't it, and delivering it to your iOS device.
So it's not working. I mean, it does contain videos, does it?
Oh, no, it does.
And they know you've got a subscription to that now, then.
Yep, so it's I think the Guardian is it $2.99 for 6 months, $3.99 for a year?
I think that's right, Ian, yep.
So I just paid for the year because it works really well. The only thing I would really like is that on an iPad. It's just a bit frustrating that it's only on the iPhone.
Do they not have an iPad version then?
They've said it's in development, and again that would be a separate cost.
Yeah, you'll have to pay a bit more for that, sure.
Yeah.
So it's not the first of its move. It's just the first one that's coming with this subscription model, which Apple are putting together.
Well, it's the first specific. I mean, they're saying it's specific to the iPad.
So it's not the same journalists, is what they're saying, as for the newspapers.
But one of the things they are doing is publishing all the articles to the web, but they're making it difficult to index. So there's a chap called Andy Bayle, has created a website, thedailyindex.tumblr.com. And he's just pulling together all the article links, so you can actually go and see what the content's like if you want, for free.
Okay. I'm sure they'll block that.
How annoyed would you be if you were trying to charge 99p a week, 99 cents a week, and someone just goes and indexes
it? But you know what? In some respects, because it is only 99 cents a week and it's just easier to go through your device to do that, then people will do it. And that's the whole point about having these really low price points.
It is
that they're throwaway. You just do
it. And that's what Jobs has always said about these things. Take it to a point where people are like, you know, the price convenience thing just disappears.
Yeah. It's just not worth me going to grab it off the internet from somewhere else when it only costs me 59p.
It also takes ages to update. You know, if I fired up just now and there's a new edition sitting there, it takes like a couple of minutes before you can actually start reading any of today's articles.
I mean, for 30 million, you would expect someone to massage all the little bits and bytes, little bits and bytes masseurs. But you would
expect them as well. That sort of money, they could have bought an Apple developer for 6 months.
I imagine though that the 30 million obviously includes all their infrastructure.
This is really petty. The developer behind Tweety, who was bought officially by Twitter. So I can't remember his name, but I know his Twitter account is 8bits. He tweeted up, and all he said was, "Evening project, I thought I could do something better." And he had the Coverflow carousel working with the same content of the Daily, and it was silky smooth. He just touched it and it flipped through loads of articles. It looked great. And it was a 30-second YouTube video, and it was basically...
Still, give him a chance. It's probably got a tie into. It's probably very, very complicated behind the scenes.
Exactly. There's a whole load of probably, you know,
Wilson.
Who knows what?
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, broadcast competition, something that Mr. Murdoch never likes, actually might be on its way. Surprise, surprise. Although I'm sure this will get blocked. Basically, a pub landlady in Portsmouth installed Greek satellite decoders to basically show Premiership football. And she was taken to court and she was fined. but basically Sky have the exclusive rights to UK football, effectively, to be shown in the UK, or to Premiership, sorry, football shown in the UK. So she took it to the European court on the grounds that offering this exclusive rights reduces competition. You know, she should be able to use any European service that's available to her because of, you know, European competition rights. And the judge actually upheld her complaint. It's apparently how Europe works is that this is a judgment from an advocate. So it's not actually legally binding on countries, yet countries' law tends to follow the advice of the advocate. So depending on what happens now, it could become UK law that you are free to use other EU country decoders. Without the risk of getting fined.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that struck me was, you know, it's like in Greece, it was the equivalent of £800, and Sky were wanting to charge her a commercial subscription of £8,000. So,
So it's a big difference.
A big difference.
And I think I think some places, some pubs were getting asked 20,000 a year.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Which is a scary old figure.
And because you have the monopoly and the exclusive rights, someone can charge whatever they feel is right. But say adding this competition, because they obviously sell, you know, Premiership football to Greece for a considerable amount less because it's not as important, clearly. So I don't know what this does. I mean, the problem is there's too much money is relying on this.
Well,
I cannot see this.
It's not just Sky. I mean, if Sky don't have the exclusivity, they won't pay the Premiership the money that they get, and the money the Premiership get is massive.
That's right. So there's too much money hanging on.
It's the Premiership are probably going to be the ones that actually start, you know, in the background, make sure this.
Well, it was the Premiership that actually brought this, you know, fine against the landlady. So the fact that the European European Court has said that they are incorrect to do so. Mm. Basically, I think it's the idea of territorial blocking is what the ruling goes against. So they'll probably just think of another model, which means that they can do it some other way.
To me, it's
yeah. I think what will happen though is that, you know, there already are different ways of looking at copyright and intellectual property in all the different laws countries in the EU. So that's where this is going to go. This is going to go back, and they'll just say, "Well, this is just like intellectual property, and therefore you can do what you like in each individual country within the EU." Do you think?
And countries don't have to take on board everything the Europe says. They get to choose which bits they want to absorb and change into their own law. So
don't worry, the Tories will make it all right.
But it's the first time we've seen where it's actually going to be. There's competition for the same game, you know, the same football match across different broadcasters, which is the only competition that's ever going to work. None of this, you know, ESPN getting a couple of games a year. It's just another person playing one game on one broadcast network. So.
Yeah, because that split, all that ended up doing was costing the fan more money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because
you know, it was instead of paying rather than one. Instead of paying Sky, you know, your 30 quid, you had to pay, you know, 40 quid so you could get ESPN as well.
Yeah. So it's only when you have games playing on two, you know, delivery channels at once, which you'll suddenly start seeing prices become a little bit more, well, market driven rather than interest driven, I guess.
Yeah, and some of the critics of this judgment were saying, look, actually what this is going to do is it's going to mean that, you know, you're only going to be able to get pan-European, rights, and therefore it's only going to be, the only people that are going to be able to afford it are the likes of Sky and these massive global corporations.
Wow, because it costs billions and billions, isn't it?
Yeah, so, and therefore actually it's going to reduce... it's going to reduce competition. Sorry, I'm just looking here at the show notes and they're magically changing from, grown and changing colour.
This is great. It's like
my the joys.
Basically, the joys a segue is being highlighted to me.
That's right. It's
Ian,
like,
you are
we've
so
had
proud
it.
Of it. Would you like to do it?
No. No.
So, from one crook to another. We've had Crime Max launched
every
in
week
the UK.
Every week we just need to call Rupert Murdoch like a crook. And it just makes me happy.
But if he offers to buy us out, then that's fine.
Do you want? I wouldn't sell myself to him.
It's just the content.
Make you change your mind.
It's just the content you're licensing. You're not selling out.
I'm not selling my soul. I'm just licensing it out.
have principles. That's all I'll say.
I'm not selling my soul to Satan. I'm just renting it.
So we have had crime maps launched in the UK. So if you would like to find out on the crimes that
no,
are reported
stop.
In your area.
Stop. It's not in the UK.
England.
England and Wales. That hacked me off last week because everybody kept reporting it as, oh, we've launched crime maps in the UK. No, you have not. Define
so you
UK.
Upset that, well, the problem is that once they put Scotland on, they couldn't see the map for the dots.
Oh,
telling you. I mean, that's racism.
It's just because there's actually better.
Are you going to sack me?
No, there's better reporting of crime up here. You know, that's all it means. You're more versed in it. You don't have less crime down there. You just kind of brush it under the carpet. Or under a particular postcode, which I think was part of the problem with this crime map, wasn't it?
I mean, to be honest, down there's full of pikies. You know, so you can't tell me there's not any. I mean, you tell me there's no crime in Liverpool.
Oh, yeah, but that's just as far north for me. Anyhow, right. So basically, it's cost them £300,000, and you can type in your postcode or your street name, and you get sort of dots showing where crimes have been reported in the rough area, not the exact positions or whatever, but
it's broken
down into sort of six or seven categories, I think.
It puts a big dot, doesn't it, you know, in the general location, which might just be right on your house, you know, for a burglary that took place five streets away.
So that, yeah, they're saying sort of it's in the region. It says it is on the street that it should be, but it's had a few teething problems. They were getting 75,000 hits per minute, which caused their servers to basically explode. And so to start with, no one could see anything, but you can now get on and you can have a look in your area. Now, like you say, there's been teething problems as far as areas shown, incorrect data and all that kind of lovely stuff. But still, it's another mashup. It's an interesting one. And
I'm... What the hell? There's a lot of crime in your area.
Oh, yes. We can't tell how much there is around you.
Two burglaries. 17 antisocial behaviour. Two violent crimes.
Anyhow, so
17 others.
For those who are paranoid, I mean, I guess this is supposed to be useful for people just, you know, finding areas and actually figuring out. I guess it's the police showing your area ain't as bad as you think it is, or the media would make you have believe. I guess there's some of that as well.
Well, but there it's, is.
It's a release of information.
It's going to be interesting, isn't it, if that kind of information is also linked in with nethouseprices.co.uk or something like that.
I was going to say, I'd be really hacked off at this if this vague black dot appeared in my house just before I was going to sell it, and the vague black dot says, yeah, it's been, you know, lots of burglaries here right on this house. Lots of antisocial behavior right on this house.
But then as a buyer, you would quite like that information of the general area, wouldn't you? So it's one of these things where, is it better to have the information out in the open? Yes, it probably is on balance.
I think it is. I was being flippant, but it's just, yeah. I have to be careful. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, particularly with raw data like this, which is not, you know, you can make up anything you like with it, isn't it?
You know?
Lies, and statistics.
Yes.
So from burglars, no, I'm not going to do this segue. It was never going to work. It was.
That's why I left it blank.
Flickr has deleted pro account users' photos. Some 4,000 photos this chap had.
The crooks. They were crooks.
Now, this is obviously, Flickr is obviously quite important for a lot of people because it's their main store and backup and you know, maybe the only existing photo store that they've got.
Right. Well, let's just stop you there. Yeah. If it's let's just stop you there. If your photos are really that important, right, yes, and you're entrusting them to an online service.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
But let me just stop you there. It's not just about the photo. It's about all the things he's favorited, the groups he's taken part in, the people that have liked his photos, all that social content round about your photos. So yes, you shouldn't be using that as a backup account, because that's not what it is. But it's all that other data that disappears with it. And it's the fact that when they delete an account, it's gone. There's no reversal. There's no way back.
But I like the fact that they've got that option, because that's goes against the things like Facebook, which means that if you do ever want to delete your stuff, it never disappears.
So in this case, the guy was reporting another member for antisocial behaviour or whatever, and they accidentally deleted his account instead of the guy he was complaining about.
Oops.
So you'd really like that option, that they can just delete it. Why didn't they say? Why didn't they set the account to private or something? Why don't they say, you know, temporarily or whatever? I don't understand how a service that's been there for, you know, 7-8 years.
Yeah, but just practically, Ian, if you do that, right, you've then got to go in at some later date and actually delete it.
But if it's that easy to delete it just now, I just don't understand why it's not that easy just to say this. It's like temporary deleted or it's hidden for all users.
We don't know how difficult it is to delete, but I'm sure
it's obviously it's obviously very easy to delete.
Do you really want to delete Fred's account? Yes. Yeah. Are you sure you really want to delete Fred's account? Yes. He's got 4,000 photos.
But the thing is that they're also,
it could just be the operator's rubbish.
Yeah, but they're also deleting lots of people's accounts. Just and all they're saying is you've violated their terms and conditions. They're not giving examples of where and why and how.
Don't forget, Yahoo are going through big problems at the moment. As far as
they've got no staff left,
and this is about the end of service.
This is a service that people are paying money for. And I mean, this guy's got a 5-year-old account. He's got 4,000 photos in it. Invested a lot of time and money. He's paying his $25 a year, and they just turn around and delete it. Now, in this case,
made a lot of stink, and obviously,
But the reason it's made a lot of stink is this was a mistake, and that's why it's made a stink. What's not getting reported is the hundreds of accounts. If you go into the forums, you can see it. Hundreds of accounts that are getting deleted arbitrarily, and they're not telling users why. I know you'd be really hacked off if you got an email through to, or you went to, you don't even get an email. You go to log into Flickr and it tells you your account's not recognised.
Right. Do you know what we need? We need to start an online service to back up Flickr.
There is one somewhere.
Yeah, but that's not through any official APIs, because obviously Flickr don't support.
No, it's a scraping service.
It's just guff. So, As an apology, the staff member emailed the guy and says, really sorry about this, I've made a mistake, and we can't restore your account. It's once it's gone, but we'll give you 4 years pro users to say sorry.
Well, it'd take 4 years to upload 4,000 photos.
Well, it's a 5-year-old account. But finally, this seems to have been the kind of tipping point, because there's been lots of people complaining about this for years, about how they deal with deletions. And what they're saying is that they're now putting in place a way of restoring content if they do delete it, and they're also giving this particular member 25 years of free Flickr Pro membership. So that at least seems something positive have come out of this mess, but it winds me up. Sorry, it really winds me up. It's indefensible.
God, you're harsh.
It's indefensible because I'm seeing the forum posts from people that are saying, you know, I've been on here 7 years and my account's been deleted. I've asked why, and all they've said is you're breaking our terms and conditions, and they're not telling you why. So how frustrated would you be if you invested in that environment?
Well, they can't tell because they've deleted the account. They can't see anymore.
But how frustrated it would be if you've become, you know, lots of favourites, all that kind of stuff. You know, people love your photos and then they're just gone.
I would be very frustrated, yet still, Flickr's probably still the best service out there for it. So, let's see. Facebook deals. Now, I don't know much about these, but apparently they've been out in the US and now they've come over here. So basically, it's attached to their Facebook places. So they're Foursquare equivalent. So you can log into places and stuff like that, check in. And now if you check into certain places like Starbucks, Debenhams, and O2, you can sometimes receive deals. It all seems a bit woolly and vague.
Sometimes.
I don't know. I'm woolly and vague.
What's that all about? I mean, I think that's a bit rubbish.
Well, I think Chris just added in the word sometimes.
I added sometimes in there.
Factually, we don't know anything about this.
It's because I never use check-in services because I think they're a bit dodgy. I don't know if you guys use check-in.
Well, the thing about check-in services, people know where you are.
Exactly, yeah. Which is never nice.
And I think that's fine if like you're at a sports centre or whatever, but if you're going around to your local GIMP mask emporium, then obviously you don't want people to know that you're buying your latest GIMP mask.
It's just one of those things where checking in alongside all the other information that people can scrape from the internet can often give people good idea of where you are at any particular time, yeah. Especially if you are away from your house. You know?
But we're seeing, I think you're seeing with Groupon and a whole lot of other deal sites that this is the future. You know, Foursquare and all that, I've got massive deals going on just now. So,
well, Foursquare due to float soon onto the stock market.
Do you know there's well, what there really is though, isn't it? There's definitely a market for an app which spoofs your GPS.
So you can actually check in all these.
So you can check into all these different places, get all the deals, and then but not actually be there.
Well, I think that there's, you know,
cha-ching.
What's the other app that's not Foursquare? It does the same thing. Goala initially didn't actually need you to be.
They still don't really. They're still very loose.
Foursquare was the same. You could check. I could check into Las Vegas right now. And the original Foursquare, and then it says, hold on, everybody's just gaming this. And they realised that if they wanted to monetize it, that they had to be a lot more accurate and say, only if you're here do you get that deal. It's the same with the Facebook app. If you check in via Places and you're in Starbucks, you get a little golden ticket thing that says get like 10% off.
I think it's going to have to get more accurate, but the thing is that you've got to cater for the fact that people's devices, especially in towns and cities, aren't that accurate. So it's still a matter of you could be, you know, within a block of.
And I still think the shop probably. I still think this is waiting for going back to batteries. It's waiting for a better battery life. You know, so you can have this on all the time, and you don't have to manually check in. It just does it. If you want it to check in when you're, you know, in a place for more than 2 minutes or something like that, and it automatically does it. You just want it run in the background. You don't want it to be checking in and leaving little comments.
I think there definitely is a thing for a service where it's spoofing you. You kind of logs you into somewhere that you're not, so it kind of randomizes where you actually are.
Spoofmylife.com. I've just registered it.
Spoofmylife.com.
Brilliant.
You too can be a rock star on spoofmylife.com.
Okay. Right. And finally. We have an immigration officer has been fired after putting his wife on a list of terrorists to stop her from flying home.
No, right.
So this sounds perfect.
Well, I'm sorry. This podcast has definitely gone downhill. There's a link in the show notes from the Daily Fail.
I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what's going on?
It's even worse. I put it in.
So this is not true then.
Seemingly, it's true. And the only reason I stumbled on it was I was reading an American website, and then they linked back to the UK's Daily Mail. And as soon as I read it, I was like, oh god. But no, this immigration officer, 3 years ago, seemingly stuck his wife was visiting Pakistan. He put her name on the list of terrorist suspects, and she couldn't fly home.
It's not funny.
It's not. It's like it's awful. But the thing that scares me is how easy it is to, like, you know. Obviously, they're not really vetting the content of these lists.
Well, you can tell they're not vetting for the people they block.
So the only reason this came to light was the guy was put forward for a promotion, and then when they started checking into his kind of like details, they realised his wife was on the list.
So how did she get home?
She didn't. She's on the list.
It's an easy way of divorcing your wife without actually having to.
So she's still stuck out in Pakistan?
Aye. The best bit was when they finished the story off. The Home Office confirmed today the officer has been sacked for gross misconduct. Never actually confirmed whether this woman's been taken off the list.
Yeah.
Dude, don't care about that. Sack that guy.
In fact, they're probably on the list now because she's so pissed off after being stuck out there for 3 years. They have to put her on the lift now. Wow.
But it's the serious side is obviously who vets the content. You know, if it's just open to that kind of abuse, you know, so who's to say that people aren't getting paid, you know, to take people off or put people on that list?
Yeah, as I was going to say, well, I mean, you know, it should be the immigration officers who are vetting it, but they're clearly abusing it. Okay, so that is the end of our news.
I've just actually went to Daily Mail. I feel dirty. His wife visited family in Pakistan, but when she tried to return to Britain, she was not allowed into the aircraft. The airline and immigration officials refused to explain to her why. She was forced to remain in Pakistan for 3 years until her husband's manipulation of the suspect list came to light. So there you go.
Bloody hell. Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like a story of a Hollywood movie, that does.
A very short Hollywood movie, but yeah.
Not very interesting one. You know, I'm sure they can spin it out. That's the end of our news. So let's have some picks. Henry, what have you got for us?
Oh, I've got loads of picks today. Well, two. Have any of you got an X Mini speaker?
No.
No.
Absolutely brilliant. They're between the size of a tennis ball and a golf ball. So you think it's something that size. And they're just a little speaker that you can plug into your iPhone or your any kind of portable device, and basically that you wouldn't believe the quality of the sound that you get from these from something so small. Basically, it's kind of a concertina thing within it.
Wow, it looks like something from Star Wars.
They are just
they look great.
they are just fantastic for if you're traveling around somewhere, you want to just get a little bit of, you know, just better sound than you get from the internal speakers, like in your laptop or a portable device.
This is wrong. I'm hitting buy now.
They are absolutely brilliant. I was using mine over Christmas, just in one of the rooms where I don't have a stereo, just left it in the corner. Great for, you know, a bit of background music. Absolutely fantastic.
Good value as well.
And good value. You can chain them together and you can put loads of them, you know, get a whole bunch of them if you want. But
which one have you got?
I've got the X Mini 2, the little red one.
Yes. Well, there's X Mini Maxis as well.
Oh, well, there you go. But they're a great little piece of kit. Very, you know, good value for money. And, you know, great for just dumping in a suitcase or something, or a laptop bag if you're traveling.
Very good, very good.
What a great pick.
Yep.
Yeah.
Damn you, making me spend money.
And the other one is really an update. I think I've chosen Boinks TV as a pick before, but it's just on the App Store now. They've got a home version, which has a reduced resolution of videos that you can make with that. But it's
so
only
$30. What's the idea behind Boinks TV then? Sorry,
Boinks TV.
Remembering.
Boinks TV is basically, it's a kind of a video application which allows you to mix a whole load of different video sources and backgrounds and things. So you can do things on the Mac, like you can pull in a whole load of different kind of backgrounds and stuff. You can have picture in picture. You can have you can do interviews, you know, kind of split screen interviews and that kind of thing, or green screen things.
So it's kind of so it's a movie editor, but with kind of just nice, yes, snazzy bits and bobs in it.
It is, but the thing that it does really well is it basically records live. So it's really okay for doing stuff like, say, you were doing a video podcast or a vodcast, whatever we call those things. Mm-hmm. It's really good for being able to do those things, for being able to pull up titles in real time.
Nice. Yeah.
So it's basically a real-time movie editor. Cool. Now they do a version with ads, which is about $300, I think. It's quite expensive, and the pro version is expensive too. So this is just an easy way in. Boinks are the guys which also made iStopMotion. If you've done any stop motion animation, they've got some good software for that. A German little independent Mac developer software house, so and make some quite nice software.
Very good. Thank you very much. And Ian, you've got one here which I can't believe.
That mini speaker's only like £12 on Amazon.
Yeah, it's bargain.
Anyway, so this is like number one on the iTunes, iStore, whatever it's called, App Store charts. And it's an instant heart rate, it's called. So it's an app for the iPhone, 59p.
So you plug it in and you take your pulse, right?
So I had resisted buying this because I thought, this is just a total gimmick. And a lot of the people on the reviews were saying gimmick, fail, crap, rubbish, all that kind of stuff. And it was Shaquille that bought it. And he came over and went, have you got this app? And I was like, don't be daft about it, it works. And I was like, yeah. And then, of course, 2 minutes later, I bought it.
Because it's 59p.
It's 59p and it works.
No,
it works.
Can't do. It can't.
It does. Don't be silly.
Tell us how it works.
So,
are you just trying to get us to buy this because you've wasted 59p and you want us all to waste 59p too?
Because
so we know how you work.
I'm going to explain the app, okay, and then later will come the science bit. So the you fire up the app. And it works better on the iPhone 4 because it's using the camera. And what it's doing is measuring or it's detecting the colour change as blood flows through your finger. And from that, measuring your heart rate. And the reason it works better on the iPhone 4 is it's got the flash, which is on all the time it's measuring. So if I fire it up just now and I click on measure, and I've put my finger over the camera lens, and it's saying my resting heart rate just now is 58 beats per minute.
Wow. That now, sounds optimistic.
So you're sitting there thinking, how do I know that's right? So there's a couple of ways I've been checking this. I have an exercise bike which has heart rate monitor, and I have been getting myself up to a certain rate, checking the iPhone app, and it's the same.
Wow.
And it's also got a couple of other features on it. You can actually, you know, measure yourself daily, and you can have a chart. You can obviously do heart rate recovery measurements as well. You know, so I've worked on my bike, I'm up at 180. How long does it take? Over 60 seconds. How quickly do I drop back down to a good resting heart rate? Which is, again, another kind of measure of, you know, fitness and how healthy you are. So 59p, and you too, if you've got an iPhone 4, can have a heart rate monitor.
I'm looking at my finger, and it's definitely not changing colour.
but this is the, and I ain't a doctor.
Your fingers pulsate.
I a doctor. Well, I'm not being, if you, because sometimes if you press, you can feel like it pulsing and stuff.
Yeah.
And it definitely ties up perfectly.
Okay. Well,
I was at Bamman another night as well, and it was spot on. Absolutely spot on. So 59p.
Against all odds.
As I said, but definitely iPhone 4 only. I wouldn't reckon, you know, what they're talking about is if you've got another older generation iPhone, you need a bright light or bright room. I guess if you hold a torch behind it.
I might buy it just to see whether it'll work on my really ancient 3G.
And also, if you've got a white finger, it won't work either. But if you don't know what white finger is, you'll be like, what? So.
Yeah, there speaks the man that works in the shipyards of Glasgow.
Exactly. Man of the Clyde. White finger.
Man of the Clyde. Vibration white finger. Hi.
Very good.
Great picks. Thank you very much, both. And that is the end of this week's podcast. If you would like to find out more, we are on digitaloutbox.com. You can email us at info@digitaloutbox.com. And we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK, should you want to follow me. Ian, where can we find you?
I am on Twitter as Sweeper, and my blog is indeed.net.
Perfect. And Henry, where can we find you?
I'm on Twitter as Talk Rhubarb.
Perfecto. So thanks very much for listening, and we will talk at you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Ta-da. Have you bought it yet?
I have.
What?
I've tried it. It works well.
I don't know where my phone is, do I? I can't
find this phone. There's a feature called Find My iPhone, you know?
Someone ring it.
Hold on. I'll do it now. Phone. I'm just going to look you up. Tiny Tim. And...
That's why they call you Chris, don't they? Because you're short for Chris.
Ba-boom. I can't hear it yet.
Oh, it's ringing. Oompa, loompa, doopity-dee. Downstairs! Oh, no, you don't go downstairs. We established that in episode, 33.